My guest at this time is Dan McGroarty. He is the president of the American Resources Policy Network. He wrote an opinion piece for the July 4th edition of the Wall Street Journal talking about a debate over what's called the Pebble Mine. That's a major copper reserve in Alaska, and if tapped, it would be the largest copper mine ever found in one place in the world. He joins me now to explain the potential that exists through that, why some folks on the environmental side are opposed to this, and, of course, the politics involved here. And, Dan, it's good to have you with us. Thank you.
Greg, I'm happy to be with you.
You say in your Wall Street Journal piece that there could be as much as 80 billion pounds of copper here. You've already established that it's potentially the largest reserve in the world. So what type of potential are we talking about with a discovery of this size?
Well, it's a significant discovery. The United States imports approximately 35% of the copper that we use. Copper demand for the different utilities is going up, and the U.S. production has been going down. So that that gap has been widening. A project the size of Pebble, once it goes to its full production, it depends on how demand shapes up, but it could almost wipe out the import dependency that we have today in copper.
What's the major concern of those in the environmental movement? Is it about the fact that any type of extraction is being suggested at all? Is it the type of extraction? What's their main concern here?
There's a couple things here, Greg. Their primary concern that many of the environmental groups are mounting is concern on the watershed, on the Bristol Bay watershed, and this particular part of Alaska. And it's entirely legitimate to examine any mine proposal, any mine project that's actually put into the permitting process for its impacts and for ways to mitigate them and weigh out the competing public goods that one has. What's dramatically different in this instance is that many of the environmental groups are urging the Environmental Protection Agency to exert a unilateral power to stop the mine project from even going into the permitting process. In other words, there will be no permitting process. They would simply say the mine can't go forward, end of story.
When this application is submitted, what part of our government either says yes or no to it?
When a mining project goes into the permitting process, there are local avenues for some of the permits. There are state avenues for some of the permits and federal as well under NEPA, the National Environmental Protection Act. So it's multi-layered, and it takes an average of 7 to 10 years for a mine to get through that process once begun. I have looked at Pebble, and my understanding is that they would require upwards of 60 different types of permits from the state, local, and federal level. So there would be an enormous amount of scrutiny put on the mine plan, and it's very important for your listeners to know that what some of the environmental groups are saying is they don't want that process to even begin. Pebble has no mine plan right now. They have not submitted anything for review. So this is about stopping for the first time a mine from even entering the permitting process.
You mentioned here that normally these types of debates play pretty much along political lines, but this time certainly a proclaimed left-of-center organization, the Center for American Progress, is on the side of letting this permitting process go through. They don't want the EPA to just kind of unilaterally veto this. And you point out in your story here, or at least your opinion piece, that if those in the environmental movement want to see a major transition to green energy, they're going to need to embrace this because copper is essential for that type of transition. Explain what they're missing and why that's so key.
Let me take the two points that you raised, Greg. First of all, yes, the Center for American Progress, which is a left-of-center think tank in Washington, D.C., did a rather brave thing. They actually, in all likelihood, they're going to oppose the Pebble Mine once it's put forward. But they said that the mine should go into the normal permitting process. That is, they want the process to work as it has been put together. That's something for which they're going to take some heat from the more extreme environmentalists on their side of the aisle. I should say, too, the Washington Post editorial page said, let's let the mine go into the permitting process. Let's examine the situation. What claims are made, what counterclaims are made, let's hear from the communities, let's hear from the experts. So that's a very sensible, rational position. Let the mining process, the permitting process, run its course. Now, the irony is in the second point that you make, which is some of the environmental groups who are opposing this copper mine outright are otherwise touting on their websites and in their talking points a transition to green energy. That is, they want to get their power from the sun and from the wind, geothermal, for instance. The interesting thing is every one of those utilities actually uses copper in order to deliver, make that power effective. So a wind turbine, a single industrial wind turbine, uses upwards of 3 tons of copper for just one wind turbine. So solar panels use a composite called CIGS, C-I-G-S, C for copper, S on the other end, selenium, a metal that is also derived from copper. 95% of it comes from copper. And then geothermal, which basically delivers power through copper coils. And then, of course, all those means are delivering power to the national grid through copper cables. So, you know, to my mind, you can't have it both ways. I mean, you can't want to make this transition that's so dependent on metals like copper and then cut off America's ability to produce those metals.
Do we know at this point, Dan, where and how the folks submitting this permit would be using this copper?
This copper would add to the U.S. total supply. So, therefore, I think it starts a kind of virtuous circle. We're used to American manufacturing being sited abroad. Part of that has been, in the case of some of these more technologically based metals, the rare earths, for instance, they are provided largely by China. So we have manufacturing going to China to be where the metals are. I think if we have an extended supply of copper in the United States, and the pebble mine's multi-metal, it's copper, molybdenum, rhenium, which is another derivative from copper itself, selenium, as I've already said. These metals will actually be able to be used in the United States. So they'll feed American manufacturing jobs, mining jobs, first of all, manufacturing jobs, secondly, after that. And then they'll ripple through the economy. Instead of being an import item where we impair our balance of trade and the jobs are sourced somewhere else.
Two quick questions before we let you go, Dan, on different topics, but very important ones is, as you stress in your piece here. First of all, you mentioned earlier that a little over a third of our copper is currently imported. And you talk about the conditions and the places where some of that copper currently comes from, specifically places like the Congo, places like Zambia. What type of issues should folks be aware about there?
Craig, that's an interesting thing, I think, on the environmentalist side. They're always saying, you know, think global. And yet one of their opponents to the pebble mine the other day, just prior to my writing the piece, really the catalyst in a way for the piece, was to say pebble will be the worst mine in the world. Well, you know, right now copper is being mined by 8-year-olds at the point of a gun under the watchful eye of Congolese warlords. It's being mined by miners without respiratory apparatus with leaky boots in Zambia. Folks who are protesting mines in Iran, which wants to expand its copper production double in the next 2 years, are being put in jail. And yet that copper is coming out into the global supply chain, and it's in the iPhone that I'm talking to you on. We don't know where it's coming from. So if you really care about the impacts of mining, I think you would support mining in the United States under the extraordinary regulations and oversight that we have here, instead of simply sourcing it from places in the world where it's being done with such devastating effect.
Last topic, but a critical one. You mentioned before that a lot of these folks, Natural Resources Defense Council and others, are pushing for the EPA to simply deny this permit before it even gets into the permitting pipeline. What kind of push is there right now to give the EPA this type of veto power, and how aggressively is the agency itself pursuing it? What should we know about that whole development?
Well, Greg, interestingly there, it is a matter of the EPA being urged to interpret the powers it already has to allow this sort of veto activity. They're using a section of the Clean Water Act, which dates back, you know, 40-plus years, Section 404, and interpreting it in a way that would allow them to stop this project from going into the permitting process, stop it before it begins. So it's a novel interpretation. In a way, if EPA does this, they will be granting themselves the authority to do this. And I must say, pebble might be the first mine and copper the first metal, but it will by no means stop with one mine, and it will affect many different metals if EPA takes that power.
And that could potentially impact energy development as well?
It could impact any number of things. There's an independent study that indicates that over $200 billion of planned economic activity in the United States runs through Section 404 of the Clean Water Act. So really that would put the EPA in a position of thumbs up, thumbs down on an enormous amount of American economic activity. That is something that no agency should be allowed to do without other parts of the government being able to look at that and see whether that's what they intended.
Dan, it's an issue I think a lot of folks were unaware of. We thank you very much for bringing it to our attention today.
Thank you, Greg. I'm happy to have the opportunity.
Appreciate it. Dan McGroarty is the president of the American Resources Policy Network. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WND.com.